Welcome back to the Rude Dude Podcast, the show that takes some weight off your plate, puts some pep in your step, and reminds you that you are loved. It is I, Cameron the Cree Davis, doing an interview piece today. Henry will not be here today. He has his mother, Deb, in town out there in what is beautiful West Virginia. I imagine Deb doesn't want to leave because it's so gorgeous out there. But they're spending some quality time. I think she was out there for like, 9 days or some shit. And, you know, them being, separated, from state to state. It's good that they're getting to spend some quality time. Hen will be back next week. So all of our super Henry fans, don't be discouraged. This will be probably the last Cameron only episode that you guys will have to stomach through. But today I actually have a very exciting guest. A little bit of a different type of twist to what we do around here. The podcast being basically around, recovery from substance abuse. We do dive into mental health stuff. But this week's guest is I've known her for a long time, actually. Now, I think if I sit back here and talk about it, we'll probably get into it in a minute. Suffered a very, very intense injury that we're going to actually get into. And I think it's going to be a very inspirational episode. To kind of pick her brain on how you deal with such a hard diagnosis and what that looks like moving forward and how she's persevering. And I think it'll be a very nice, heartwarming and motivational episode for all of us. So without further ado, let me get my guest in for the week, Mrs. Rachel Roberts.
Hello.
Hey, Rachel. Hey, Rachel.
Hey,
how are you today?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm so happy to be here. It's very honored and excited, and this is the very first podcast I've ever done, so it's a nice learning experience. And like I said, I'm just very touched and honored.
No worries. The funny thing was we were at the soccer game, my kid's soccer game, 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. and Michael, actually, for our old fans here, Michael used to be our producer on the show, was like, you should have Rachel on. And I was like, you know what, pal, that's a great fucking idea. So yeah. It's that to you, and I appreciate your willingness to come on.
Absolutely,
that was going to be my question. I was like, first time on a podcast.
First time. It's like, where do I look? What do I do? It's very cool. I'm only ever used to, just watching them on YouTube or Spotify. So it's, I'm very honored. My heart's, going a little fast right now. It's exciting. But I'm an open book, and I'm hoping to really, if I could just touch one person out there and mm-hmm. kind of maybe shift their perspective, to be more lighthearted, to just be more understanding, compassionate, just in a more positive way forward. That means the world to me. So
absolutely. That's kind of like our motto here. Even if, only one person listened to the podcast and it made a difference in their life, then that's all that matters. And even if it was just Hen and I meeting up and having a conversation with ourselves, just to talk stuff out about the struggles that we have, then that's all we need. It's not about fame and fortune. It's about affecting lives. And I have a feeling we're going to. So why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself? Where were you born? Yada, 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 stuff like that.
Yeah. So my name is Rachel Roberts. I was born here in California, born in Carmichael, spent the first 10 years of my life growing up and living in Rosemont, California, which is just kind of like a small suburb outside of Sacramento. And then at the age of 10, I moved up to a little town called Orangeville. It's a sister town next to Folsom. And if anybody is a rock and roll fan, Johnny Cash, Folsom Prison Blues, that same exact Folsom. And I've been living here ever since. Had amazing opportunities to kind of travel the world. So I did that briefly. I played soccer for about 17 years. Mm-hmm. That was a really amazing time for me, that at one point, you kind of go through phases, right? That was who I was. I was Rachel, the soccer player. Yep. And I coached. I've worked various jobs. I worked at Chick-fil-A. That was amazing. Shout out to Chick-fil-A, great chicken nuggets. And just honestly, it's a great work environment. They really lay an amazing foundation. My pleasure, that still slips out every now and again. And I used to work in the cannabis industry. That was a never dull moment, very exciting stuff, and touched a lot of people, so it's very, very cool.
That is cool. That is cool. Yeah, I know when I met you, because I'm sitting here trying to connect the dots. Like, how long have you and Michael been connected? Because I'm trying to think about how long I've known you now.
Let's see. We met working in the industry.
It was at RCP, yeah.
Gosh, yeah, I was at RCP. I was 21. I had just turned 21 when I started working there. So since I was 21, I'm 33 now.
Yeah, so
So
11, 12
probably about a
years.
decade.
Yeah, yeah.
Indirectly about a decade.
Damn, we know each other a lot longer than I thought. Now that I sit here and think about it.
Time has flown by. It
It really
is
has.
crazy.
You know, I think well, before we get into some other stuff, it must have pained you watching my daughter, because she's terrible at soccer. You're probably sitting there watching
Oh
like,
no, not at
no,
all.
no.
It's great. I mean, kids are just so pure and innocent in such a in like in a way that like, like a beautiful flower. Like it's just you could just learn to cherish those moments and like, they're gonna be gone. But kids are amazing and it's hilarious to watch them play bumblebee ball. Like I said, I used to coach, so it never dull moment, very entertaining. And I sometimes use like the love of kids to kind of propel me into being more in the moment, right? And just enjoying things for what they are.
You know, that's something we can't kind of gloss over. I'm glad that you have that mindset, because it's super true, right? Like, because children aren't living in the worries that we are in adulthood, right? Like they literally are in the present. Like, I'm happy, sad, mad, glad. It's one of those emotions, and we're just completely immersed in life. And if we could model that for ourselves, I think the world would be a lot of a better place. The only reason I asked about the soccer thing is because, you know, I played my whole life too, and it's just like watching her, you know, it just seems like she's not interested in it. She's being a little kid, and I'll give her maybe one more year. This will be her second year playing. But it's like, you know, I had a vision, right? Like, hey, my daughter's going to play soccer like I did, and she's going to be fantastic. And I just don't think she has it, right? And that's okay. That's okay. So, but I do think it's funny. It drives me nuts a little bit. I sit there and be like, can we just go out there and like I was scoring goals at this age, my child, go out there and score a goal for me, please.
There's that little competitiveness in there. Like, you can do it. Go on, go on.
Yeah, and she's
It's
over
right
there picking flowers.
there.
Yeah, just picking flowers, messing around with Eliza and stuff like that.
Living in the moment.
That's right.
Enjoying the
Yeah, see, so I'm actually the dickhead here, guys. So now that we're sitting here listening, I'm the asshole dad.
weather.
But so we did all that. We worked at the cannabis club, all that. You know, you like I said, you were in a relationship with Michael for a long time. We had I guess we can just kind of jump right into it. Can you explain the day that your accident happened? What were you doing that day?
So for those listening, I am a T7, T8 complete paraplegic. So I am now wheelchair bound. And the day was February 21st of 2022. It was funny leading up to the 22nd. I was like, oh, it's all twos, two, 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 two. That'll be great. I should play the lottery. Little did I know, I won the lottery of life, and the experience of becoming a paraplegic. And, I was, let's see, I was actually living in New Mexico for almost 2 years. And then I had moved back home to California that previous summer. And I had just started getting into mountain biking. I bought a mountain bike out in New Mexico. It's gorgeous out there, like all sorts of trails to walk, run, play, experience. And I would go out there a little bit, but it's the desert. It's hot. I prefer the shade covering of a tree. And so I met up with Michael, and we were going to go ride our bikes. And I had already been out on the trail that day, just kind of being by myself. And when you're by yourself, there is a part of you that tends to proceed with more caution, right? And so I was actually just getting ready to call it a day. And then Michael had showed up, and I was like, hey, let's go hit this trail. I hit it the other day. It was a kind of like a straightaway trail, and then at the end did like a pretty sharp right or sharp left turn, but it was like a wall, right? And anybody who's ever done skateboarding, BMX, you kind of have to hit it at a certain speed. And the previous day I went too slow and I crashed and I actually hurt my leg. But I was like, okay, well, when I come out here tomorrow, I'll go a little faster because I learned my lesson, right? And I remember just before the turn, we stopped, we got off the bikes, and we were just chit-chatting. Michael's like, well, this is either badass or intense. There
Kind
was
of
a little,
gnarly, yeah.
yeah. He's like, are you sure about this? I was like, yeah, no worries. And I was like, I just got to get enough speed. And so, I remember the exact moment of, because on the other side of this turn slash wall was probably about a 10 to 20 foot drop on the other side. And I remember my front wheel going kind of down and over. And I knew instantly right there, I was like, oh, this is gonna like shit, this is gonna hurt.
Yeah, it's gonna
Yeah,
hurt, right? Yeah.
I'm gonna break an arm, I'm gonna break a leg. That was the extent. I think I lost consciousness for maybe a little bit. It wasn't very long, because Michael hadn't even come down that like embankment, for lack of a better term, call it an embankment. He hadn't even come down from the embankment yet. And I remember kind of trying to roll over, and then some pain, still in shock, but some pain. And I just remember, Michael, call 911, call 911. And he ended up kind of like rolling me over because I didn't look down, but I think my legs were kind of tangled or in a not normal position, right? And I could just tell kind of like the look in his eyes, like he was like, oh, this is not good. And when reality kind of started hitting me, the trauma was like, the shock is still there. So there's a part of my brain that's like, what's going on? What's going on? What's going on? Still very conscious. But then there's another part of my brain that was like, oh, you broke your hips, because I couldn't feel my hips. And I was like, oh, okay. And then you kind of panic a little bit. You're like, oh shit, I broke my hips. This is going to really suck. This is going to be a long recovery. This is going to be really painful. And, Michael just kind of calmed me down a little bit. There was an eyewitness that had actually saw me fall from start to finish. I don't know who they are to this day. I think Michael would know that information. And when we get further down the line, I'll circle back around to that, just their perspective and how I may have impacted the rest of their life, and the feelings that I get from that. But yeah, so we're kind of out by the American River. We're away from the road. So in order for Michael to like meet the ambulance, he had to leave me. And so and the stranger was there, but they're not in my peripheral, right? Like I'm staring up at the clouds. I don't see anybody around me. Time, the feeling of time completely changed for me there. I'm looking at the clouds and everything slowed down. And in a way, you just that was my first moment of surrendering to a feeling. A feeling I can't control, a feeling, anxiety, whatever it is, like the earth just kind of swallowing me up and being like, okay, like
here we are.
Yeah, no distractions. Like I'm looking at the clouds and I kind of have what I say, like a godly moment, you know?
Okay. You, like an out of body experience kind of almost, yeah, yeah, like very a spiritual much so. Moment. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you're dreaming a little bit. You know, like, is this real? But time slowing down and just watching the clouds pass you by and then being pulled right out of that with the sound of the ambulance coming. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, they're here. And it's about maybe a dozen people showed up from Fish and Game wardens. I'm not sure if there was a sheriff there. I think there was a bunch of EMTs, and they're all just kind of gathered around staring at me. And, you know, I knew it was bad by the way they were kind of interacting with me and the questions that they were asking.
Yeah.
And I think maybe my delirious optimism, like, oh, this girl is for sure in shock. Like, she's asking me how my day's going and she's laying down here with a broken back. Like, she's in shock.
Yeah.
And then I remember getting into the ambulance and then slowly drifting off to sleep. I think obviously they gave me like some sort of pain medicine. And it was funny because there are so many Michaels in my life. But like different Michaels, right? Very common name.
Yeah.
The EMT, his name was Michael. Okay. And that was really funny. And then another EMT that I had was also named Michael. And but yeah, it's I ended up going to Mercy San Juan.
Okay.
And you know, that's when reality started hitting.
Okay.
Really starting to set in. And I'm going in through the emergency room, and it was in 2022, so kind of at the tail end of COVID, kind of not at the tail end of COVID. One of the first questions out of their mouth was, do you have the vaccine? Do you have the COVID shot? Do you want that?
I'm sorry. Like, I have to interject.
I was very annoyed at that point. I was very annoyed.
I can't feel my legs and you're asking me if I want the COVID vaccine. Get the fuck out of my face, dude.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, I literally have no idea
what's happening right now.
I'm going to wake up tomorrow and you're asking me if I have a vaccine. Very silly stuff. but I just remember, I tried to be as polite as I could. I said, no, thank you. No, thank you. Got to the point where I was like, no, I don't want the vaccine. Don't ask me again.
Yes.
And it was just, and they got it. They're like, okay, we heard you, got it.
Yeah.
And then they were like, do you care about these pants? Can we cut these pants off you? Oh shit. Yeah. Can we take your shoes off? Yeah. So they take my shoes off, they cut my pants off. Do you want your sports bra? No. They cut me clothes.
They cut you off, yeah.
Yeah. There's maybe, again, another half a dozen strangers that I don't know that are now looking at my body butt naked.
Yeah.
Then I start to cry. Yeah. Then the feelings start to come in. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm probably not going to get out of this. I might get a little teary-eyed here. I remember apologizing to the staff. I'm sorry I hurt myself. Which is such an odd thing to say, right? But it goes back to my childhood and, you know, not wanting to take up space, not wanting to burden people, which is ironic now because those feelings kind of doubled down as a wheelchair user. And I remember apologizing, you know, I'm so sorry. And then it switched over to, I hate myself. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. I hate myself. I hate myself. And I remember the surgeon, they're behind me, right? And I'm laying down, and he just gently grabs the side of my face. And I don't know what he said, because as he's doing it, they're giving me an epidural in my neck. But it was very comforting, and I just remember looking in his eyes, and he was just like, "Everything's gonna be okay. Please don't say that about yourself." Like, just so gentle and so exactly what I needed in that moment to go to sleep peacefully and be okay. Like, it's like almost somebody like that's witnessing you just before you die in a way, because that's ultimately, I mean, I didn't know. It's a huge major surgery. I have two rods in my upper back with about 12 screws. And anything could go wrong, because I actually, when I fell, I hit the handlebars and I kind of plopped over, right? Almost like ricocheted off my bike, and I gave myself a small fracture in my heart. And so there was, some nervousness about that. And
Well, God bless that surgeon
exactly,
for coming up.
exactly.
I have to highlight that. That's that shared humanity, right? Like that's that.
It's in those moments, and it's such a small moment, but it was so impactful. And all it was is just seeing me, acknowledging me, and seeing me. And it was amazing how much comfort that was able, like,
To
to
bring, right?
provide me.
Yeah.
And about 3 days later, I woke up in the ICU. That was kind of a traumatic experience, because when I woke up, I was still on breathing tubes. So it's almost like you're waking up underwater, and then the buzzard starts going off, beep, 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 beep. Yours just start coming in, they put you back under, and then you wake up again, you got a sore throat. I remember I could just barely whisper. Like, I could whisper, but for about 4 days after that.
You know,
And
I had two like major intestinal surgeries back when I was like 13 and 16. Nothing on the caliber.
still extremely painful.
I almost died actually when I was 13. They misdiagnosed me, but I had one of those like tubes up my nose down like to pump my stomach and like nothing. I wasn't intubated, but I know that feeling of when they finally take that out. I had it in there for like I think like 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Like it just hurts so bad in your throat. So I can kind of see what you're saying. That actually terrifies the shit out of me. I got to take a little side tangent here. The intubation thing, it do you feel like you're drowning? Like what does that feel like?
So you're
Like you just wake up and
it's like
you're not
you're
breathing for
ga
yourself.
yeah you're yeah exactly you're trying to gasp, and then you have like just this obstruction, like,
Oh
and
my
you're
God.
choking on air, and you can kind of feel it a little bit, but it's like just a lot of pressure. And I just remember just kind of choking in a sense. And so it's like, oh great, like one of my first memories of waking up is that of choking. And some of the PTSD that I have is if I'm having a nightmare, like, and I'm waking up breathing, it's like, oh, you kind of have that flashback, and it's like, oh, whew, like you have to ground yourself and kind of look around and like, okay, like, you're looking for things. And I just start listing things, right? Like, so I look in over here and I'm like, oh, that's a cup of water, tell myself cup of water, just kind of bring myself back to reality.
Dude,
But
I do a
it's
similar thing. I do a similar thing when I because I have massive anxiety issues, like right, like so if I ever get into like a super panic, like the way that I'll get myself if I'm in the car, I'll start reading off license plates out loud. So like
Oh
if there's
yeah,
a car in
that's
front of me,
great.
I'll read license plate numbers or I'll read street signs. You know what I mean? Like kind of like what you're saying. Like okay, there's a cup right there. You know what I mean? Like because I, it's like when you're spiraling like that, it's very helpful to do. But yeah, I didn't mean to get off onto the breathing tube thing. I just that
Oh no,
just
not at all.
sounds so terrifying. Like I'm fucking sweating over here thinking about
I'm shaking a little bit, like, just I'm shaking just more for like in excitement, but then also like, oh wow, you're like, I haven't sat with these feelings for a couple years.
Well, I
So
appreciate you
it's just
talking to
like,
me about it.
it's yeah, it's different, it's par for the course. But and I'm very fortunate, very, very fortunate, because other people Thank God for social media, right? And I never thought I would be the kind of person to say that, especially within the disabled community, because up until 30 years ago, we didn't have civil rights as a disabled person, which is crazy to think about because it's like you're literally viewed as the government as non-human. And so social media has allowed me to get in touch with all sorts of different wheelchair users and hear their stories. And I'm like, wow, like in a way, I'm like, it could be worse. And I don't want to say that to invalidate my experience because shit, like it's shitty. Like just because it could be worse doesn't mean it's not worse, right? But I am still grateful that my accident kind of unfolded the way it unfolded. And even leading up to that, you know, I was going back to like the sign, like it's like a I don't know what the acronym stands for off the top of my head, but DBT and CBT, which is a type of therapy. So I had seen a therapist for in my early 20s for about 7 years, and she was from Mumbai, India, and she really helped give me the tools I think I needed and that I still carry with me to this day to help get me through those really bad panic attacks, those really bad PTSD episodes. I'm still a human. I still am flawed. I still kind of succumb to the anger and the fear, and you know, projecting that onto other people, which isn't always necessarily fair.
It's
But I go ahead.
sorry, it's easy
No,
to do.
yeah.
It's easy to
It's
do.
so easy to do.
It's really
Yeah.
easy to do. I remember before
Especially to
I
our loved ones, you
yeah,
know.
I was terrible when I was a kid because I was anxious as hell all the time. And I was in therapy really young and I would get like I'd get these panic attacks being on the freeway, right? And so I was afraid to be on the freeway. And dude, I would just like scream at my parents and like, you know, my brother's sitting there watching me. And but I didn't know what I was feeling, right? Yeah, I didn't know what it was. I thought I was dying. I thought we were all gonna die. Like everything, the world's coming to an end. And I yeah, you lash out at your loved ones. I'm so glad that you said that. And it's because I feel like it's because we're comfortable with them, right? Like you know they're not gonna go anywhere. So it's like I'm gonna take this out on you because I'm crawling out of my fucking skin. But let me go back to this really quick before we get on to the social media thing, if you don't mind. How did they break that news to you? I'm
Oh, so
so what was it after surgery? Like
it
I
was after
imagine.
surgery.
Okay.
So my surgery lasted about 12 hours, I think it was.
Wowzers.
And I got to the hospital around, it was in the afternoon, maybe 4 o'clock. And so they put me under, and then the doctor came in at like midnight. And 3 days later, when I woke up in the ICU, you know, the doctor came in very nonchalant, like they kind of do, you know, it's par for the course. And, you know, he said there's a 1% chance that you'll ever walk again.
Oh my God.
And I've always been, so you know this, so a lot of, I'm known, some people call me Sunshine, right? That's a nickname of mine that I've had for a long time. I joke that I'm delusionally optimistic, right? And so it's like when I'm not optimistic, you know, I'm really having a hard time. But I was when he told me that, I was like, 1%. All right. That's
So it's like Dumb and Dumber. You're saying there's a
yeah.
chance.
You're saying there's a chance. Yeah, exactly. And so I was like, okay, like I could do this. I got this 1%. But he came in, you know, and he apologized, and it's like, oh, you know, I remember telling him, I said, don't apologize. Like, no need to apologize. I understand these things happen. I'm appreciative for you that you did the surgery on me and that I'm waking up right now and we're having this conversation. And again, he the everybody I kind of came into contact with, nurses, CNAs, phlebotomists, the janitors, were all kind of just taken aback by that optimism.
Yeah, I was going to
And
say that's got to be really, really odd for them to see, you know,
yeah.
when you deliver that type of diagnosis. I know, like, if I was to be in that surgeon's shoes, and despite the fact that they walk in like calm, cool, and collective, I like to believe, like, you know, like the moment that he shared with you when he put his hand on your face, like, ready, he's a human being. You're a young woman. And he's like, okay, I have to come in here and I have to tell her, like, hey, you remember, you know how you enjoyed riding bikes? Well, that's not happening anymore. And so, like, for you to like spin it on its head and be like, hey, you know, like, I'm just grateful to be alive. Like, it probably threw him back, because even hearing you say it right now is like, God damn, man. Like,
It's weird.
I gotta stop moping around here, dude. You're
Well, see, and it's not, and yeah,
No,
and I
it's
don't,
it's
you
and that's
know.
not a dig. That's not a dig at you.
Right.
I think that's fucking fantastic. I think it's great, and it's one thing that I really do enjoy about you, and that's why I wanted to have you on. But I can see how, like I said, like how it really threw him off. So that you were like the anomaly in there, yeah? Everybody coming in to see
That's
the
funny.
optimistic paraplegic.
And I'm not ugly, you know. I'm not the most pretty crayon in the box, but a lot of the, and I just had my lashes done, my nails done, and people would hear about that, and nurses that weren't even my nurses were wanting to come in and see me and talk to me. And you know, I just couldn't wrap my head around how not necessarily used to the negativity and the despair. But then as my time, so I was in the hospital for about 3 months. As the time went on, I was like, oh, okay. I can see why people give up hope. Because it got kind of awkward and lonely for me being so optimistic, because it was almost like people didn't want me to, or it's almost like people were like,
I bet you they were
wanting me
trying.
to be, huh? Go ahead.
I
Go.
bet I
Sorry.
bet
Yeah.
I no 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 I interrupted you. I bet you they were probably saying like, hey, they wanted you to like come to reality, and maybe they were trying, like, that would
Right.
be my guess. Like, this is
Yes.
just a defense mechanism on her part, from not
Yes.
accepting what's going on. And so I could see how that could be frustrating and be like, hey, can you show me some normal human emotions? Like, this is a bad situation, and you just weren't doing that. So, like I said, you're an anomaly for having that outlook. And I may be off base there, but that's what I would be
No,
saying.
very much so, very much so. And I just had, and I guess it's just who I am as a person, right? Before being paralyzed, you know, I would cry by myself. I kind of had a rough upbringing, you know, very distant parents, probably shouldn't have been parents, you know. And so even growing up, it was like, go to your room and don't come out until you feel better. It's like, well, as a kid, you can't really self-soothe, you know. You have to be kind of taught and guided through. So I spent a lot of years isolated in that regard. But I would cry at night. I would cry at night, and sometimes the nurses would come in, and as soon as they would come in, it was like that feeling of grief and sadness, just I shoved it down. It's like, okay, I don't want them to see me cry. I don't want them to see me sad. In a way, it's almost like I always wanted people to remain hopeful of me, even when I lost hope in myself. And so I think that's where I kind of closed off to the world. And even, I mean, I'm about in February, it'll be 3 years. I'm just now reintegrating myself back into society. Quote society, right? Months on end. I mean, I would stay in bed. Sometimes I wouldn't even get out of bed. But there was a lot of hope in the hospital. But that's also where I got my first taste of like people projecting their doubt onto me. And then I started to go inward. Well, am I being too optimistic? Am I being too hopeful? Like, you start to question yourself. Then you start to question like who you are as a person, right? And then the imposter syndrome sets in. And it's like, oh my gosh, like it was I who I was before the accident? Is that who I am now? Like, where did she go? Like, and it's a rebirth in a sense, but it's you're going through really rough waters. And I think that people that struggle with addiction can really understand that.
Absolutely.
Even like with imposter syndrome, mothers typically can understand it because, they're carrying a child for 9 months, their body physically changes, and then they become mom, right? It's like, who am I, and I think the best thing I could say is just to give yourself grace. And it's so hard to do, especially if you feel unworthy of that. But it's really those moments, like with the surgeon, like grabbing my face and just seeing me, and for a split second, like, right? We have 24 hours in a day. It took them 10 seconds to do that. And that 10 seconds quite literally impacted my life. I still remember it to this day. And it still has an influence on me, and it still gives me that incentive to kind of just leave little sparks of joy in people, little bits of sunshine. Here I go, or like here and there, and go about just living more so in the present, and like just taking a moment and acknowledging and being present, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
You're onto something there with like, just how important those small interactions are, right? Like I know
right.
we've circled back to that surgeon saying that stuff to you a few times already, but I recently, what was it, just to go on a little tangent to give you a break. I had a buddy from high school who has like a Whatnot stream, right? And Whatnot's like this little like app where you bid on shit. And he just started it, and I just hopped on to support, and I told him, "Hey man, it's Cameron," and he goes, "Cameron Davis," and he goes, "I love you, brother." And he turns around the phone, and he's supposed to be selling shit, but he's telling everybody in this stream how when we were 15, Henry was in this class with me. We were in freshman biology, and Kyle was a very heavy set guy, right? He's very big.
Yeah.
I guess we're sitting there. I don't even remember this because I was stoned at the time, but I guess I did it. One kid looked at him and just called him the fat motherfucker. And so what I did is I turned around and I said, "That's right, bro. You're fat motherfucking Kyle, bro. Hell yeah." And I slapped his hand and we like high-fived or something like that. He's telling this
Yeah.
story to everybody. And he just literally said, like, "I want to thank you for that, Cameron, because it gave me confidence in myself. I have carried that with me my entire life." His mom was on the stream and messaged me and was like, "Everything Kyle said is true. He literally,
Oh.
he brings you up all the time that you made him be who he is." And I was like, "Dude, like for real? Like we're talking about, stoned Cameron in fucking freshman biology with a chew in his mouth, but the random act of kindness,
Yes.
those small things have that ripple effect and can change people's lives, right? Like even just the small thing like that surgeon did, and what you're saying is just super powerful. It almost made me cry, to be honest with you, because it's just like, damn, dude, if everybody could just kind of realize that. I think we'd all be walking around with the nickname Sunshine, right? Yeah, we would.
It's yeah, absolutely. And it's really crazy. Society, I didn't realize how much society plays in people's mental health and well-being. And there is this like underlying tone in society that you have to go, do, all these like implements. And if you don't reach this goal, and if you don't do this by this age,
You're a
you're a
failure.
failure. Yeah, or you're this or you're that. And it's like, but when we talk to each other as individuals, it's something that we all know, like, come on now, like that
It's all
just
bullshit,
is,
yeah.
it's trivial. It's not, is it really as serious as it needs to be?
No.
But it's like, I don't know, society, it's a really weird thing. And so like when I started to get back out there in society, me being me, before my accident, I struggled with OCD a lot. And I had anxiety. But I wouldn't necessarily have like rituals, but I would like to have like a tidy room before I left, you know, so I could come back and be nice and tidy. Just I like things nice and tidy.
I get that. Same
And it
here.
makes, yeah, you know, it's like who doesn't, right? One of the struggles that I was dealing with and even now still deal with is the time it takes me to do something, right? So like getting in a vehicle, like you as an able-bodied person, you don't think anything of it. It's like, oh, it takes me less than 30 seconds to get in the car. It quite literally takes me anywhere from 10 to 15 minutes, you know. So I go out to my car, I transfer over, I have to break down my wheelchair. And what I mean by breaking down my wheelchair is simply dismantling it and then putting it in my car. And where my level of injury is I actually don't have the use of half of my diaphragm, right? So I don't really have any ab muscles, and therefore no core function or balance. And so, you know, I'm pretty petite person. I'm using my little tiny chicken arms. I'm pulling up this chunky, oversized wheelchair up and over my body. And, you know, I would just sob the entire time. I would sob. I would be so mad and frustrated and annoyed with myself and annoyed with the situation. And then over time, I noticed kind of a shift in my perspective. And you'll find this a lot too if you talk to other members of the disabled community, is they can't really put like a pin on when their perspective starts to shift. It's like a slow erosion. One day you know, it's like I'm on the verge of tears because I'm frustrated that I'm not moving fast enough. And I just ask myself, where are you going? Like, what's the hurry? Like, who is really mad at myself right now? Me? Or is it like these ideas that society has kind of implemented onto me and I'm not meeting that expectation and therefore I'm like punishing myself? And you just get on like this hamster wheel of thoughts like, oh, you're useless. Look at you. You can't even get your chair in the car. You know, you're taking forever. People are going to leave you. Like, I have abandonment issues. So I always thought that if I wasn't going to like show up on time, they were just going to leave, you know, or I didn't want to delay people. I didn't want people to feel like I was wasting their time or burdening them. So I'd put like a lot of internal pressure on myself to just show up as ultimately somebody like I wasn't. It's like, oh, I was just having a breakdown in the car because I was afraid that you guys were going to leave or afraid that I was going to be a burden. And I noticed that if I don't share those feelings with the person I'm meeting up with, you know, then I'm still kind of stuck in my head. And I feel like that kind of takes away from the interaction that I'm having with them. And then they're looking at me like, well, what's wrong with them? Like, why are they feeling this way? It's like, well, I just had like a really frustrating moment. And it's hard to surrender to that. It's hard to be like, yeah, I struggled to get in the car. Like I never in a million years thought as a 33-year-old young woman that that would ever be part of my vocabulary, you know? And the flip side to that is, what's the rush? You know, it's like racing to a red light. Like, what's the point? You're gonna go up there and you're gonna stop. The people that care for you are gonna make space for you. They're gonna hold that space for you. They're not gonna judge you. They're not gonna give you a hard time. They're gonna be supportive. They're gonna be understanding. Like, and if they're not, then maybe those people aren't for you. Or
You know
maybe they're going through something and they can't acknowledge it because what you're going through is maybe a little too heavy for them to carry. And that's fine too, you know? I had really quick. I was part of this. I'm a part of a lot of spinal cord injury support groups because ultimately, at the end of the day, the only people that can really understand, truly understand where I'm coming from are other people that had similar circumstances, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Gunshot, car accidents, you know, just that trauma of becoming paralyzed. And I remember sharing in this group, and one of the ladies, she came up to me afterwards and she goes, "You know, one thing that's really cool about being in a wheelchair is it deters the people that are not meant for you." Right? Like the people that are not meant for you are not going to approach you. They're not going, you know, they're going to be kind of standoffish, or, you know, it's like a filter. I think that was what she said too. Being in a wheelchair is a great filter for people. The ones that are going to stick around, you know, are really the ones that are meant for you.
Yeah, that's
And
like
just that support,
it
you know.
reminds me of it reminds me of a quote that my wonderful co-host says, the people that mind don't matter, and the people that matter don't mind.
Yes,
And
exactly. Exactly.
that's what it is, man. That's what it is. And I love what that person said, right? It is a great filter. You filter out the bullshit. Who are the real ones and who are not, right? Like, and I don't know if it's a societal thing that, oh, hey, we see each wheelchair, like we you know, there is a natural trepidation to like feel bad, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, just from my perspective, right? Like, I didn't try to come up and play like a whole bunch of, you know, small violins for you when I saw you the first time since you've
Yeah,
been in the
which I
chair.
appreciate very
You
well
know what I
because
mean? Like, I just,
I have a really good story I'll share afterwards that is just like, but
yeah,
yeah, it's yeah, I appreciate that because
yeah,
it's
because
like
I don't want to be treated that way with my alcoholism, right?
exactly.
Like,
Yeah,
oh, hey, buddy, like, I'm sorry you can't have this beverage because you'll
right.
burn your whole life down. Be like, dude, I don't want your fucking pity party. Like,
Yeah,
thank you. I know you mean it out of like well-being, but it's unnecessary, right? Like,
Yeah, and
I
that's not who you are.
no,
Like,
it's not a
Cameron is
determination.
not alcohol, right? You know what
Exactly.
I mean?
Exactly.
Like, I am not my wheelchair.
No,
Like,
you're not.
I am just so. I had this opportunity to talk to a police officer once, and he was very amazing. And you know, I had texted him and to thank him for just having an open ear for me, right? And I said, "Hey, it's Rachel, the girl in the wheelchair." And he texts me back and goes, "Don't ever refer to yourself as the girl in the wheelchair." And I was just like, "Damn, like you're right." Like, because I'm not, like, there's so much more to me than my chair, right? And
Hell yeah.
I just, everybody has trauma. Everybody carries something. Mine is just on display. And that sometimes, you know, because it's on display, people are more curious, you know. So for example, last night I was at a friend's house trimming, and they were gonna have this masseuse come over, and it's just really, really funny. We all ended up going up because trimming is a lot. I mean, we're trimming for hours on end.
That's mind-numbing work, by
It's
the
mind numbing. Your hands hurt, your shoulders hurt. So we're like, "Hey, this person's gonna come in, you know, we'll get a nice little massage, we'll go for a couple more hours." But everybody ends up leaving because it was getting late. And me and Michael were the last to go. And the lady finally comes and kind of broken English lady. It was very dark out, but she was Asian. And I don't know her, never met her a day before in my life, comes up to me and grabs my thigh. Just doesn't even say anything, just grabs my thigh. And I'm like, "Oh, wow, this is intrusive." But you know, you can kind of tell, like, you can kind of tell that she was doing it more so, like, not to be like malicious or anything like that, right? Like, if it was maybe an American, you know, or like a male, I would be like, "What the fuck?
Yeah, what are you
Don't
doing?
touch me." But you know, I think it was more so out of her curiosity. And you know, Michael was with me, and he was like, I could tell he was kind of getting protective over me in the sense of like, "Yo, lady, like, back up." For me, I understand the curiosity. sometimes I do appreciate it because she was trying to be helpful. She was like trying to help me in my car. It's like, oh no, I got it. I don't need it. Thank you. Yeah, the personal space and the personal boundaries as I integrate into society more, simply because I am in a wheelchair, people tend to go out of their way to do things that they probably shouldn't be doing or wouldn't do to somebody who's walking, right? Like if you're out at the grocery store with your daughter and she's in a stroller and somebody, just stranger, just decides to move the stroller.
Yeah, it's not
Because
happening. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. It's like, excuse me, like I am an adult. I have a voice. You know, you could talk to me. You can ask me. Ask me what I'm capable of, you know. So it's really interesting to see how people treat me, right? Like, and on my sad, dark days, I am not receptive to the help. I try to be. I try to be graceful and as patient as possible. It can be very difficult.
I imagine so.
And it's like that's when you really have to like lean into the support of like, for me anyways, like other wheelchair users, you know, and like I'm a part of this group chat and we'll just go on and we'll share stories and we'll be like, yeah, fuck them, you know, just like the camaraderie in our suffering. And by the way, like on a side note, some of the most hilarious people I've ever met have been disabled people. It's just, I don't know if you've ever watched Kill Tony. It's great. That has really helped the humor, the dark humor, and then the bonding has really helped me get through with dealing with people. But it's crazy just how much you have to surrender. I feel like that's like a key word for my experience is surrendering to things that make me uncomfortable and quite literally not being able to go anywhere, not being able to escape. I really have to sit with my feelings. And I think sometimes people who don't deal with addiction, who don't deal with any kind of like major trauma, don't necessarily understand the feeling of not being able to escape, right? Like, there's no amount of distraction that I could give myself to where I can just not be paralyzed anymore, right? Like, I can't. There's like no amount of consumption of whatever it is that will distract me from the fact that I'm paralyzed. Like I won't be able to go into like La La Land, you know.
And pretend that they were in a different reality, right?
Yes, exactly. And it's tough. It's tough.
Fuck yeah, it is. Fuck yeah, it is. And I gotta say, I'm so glad that there are resources like the group chat and these groups
Yeah.
for people like you. I think I mentioned it at the soccer game a little bit, but I just want to say it almost follows like the AANA model, right? Like
It
yeah,
does.
that
Yeah.
we're there to talk to like-minded people who understand me and understand what I'm going through. It's a safe place for you to go. I'm so glad that you have something like that. And it's so funny how you mentioned there. Yeah, you may not be dealing with like addicts or alcoholics, but you're like, yeah, the dark humor and shit like that. Like
Yeah.
you go in. I don't know if you've ever been in like an AA or an NA meeting. Like we could literally like someone could come in chair and be talking about how they fucking were blacked out on crack and slamming heroin and all this shit. They slapped a kid and all this shit,
Yeah.
like doing the most hellacious shit, and we'll all just laugh about it, right? Because we
Yeah.
understand that when you're out of your mind, like,
Non-judgment.
yeah, it's like, dude, you're a fucking idiot, like, you know what I mean? Like,
Exactly.
you're
Like,
like,
why
what
would you
the,
do that? Yeah.
yeah, you know what
And
I
it's
mean?
in those moments where it's like
It makes
you
it feel
do
normal, right?
feel, yes, you
Yeah,
feel
you're accepted.
normal, but you feel at peace. You feel at peace with what you're going through, knowing that you're not alone. That's like, I mean, I could call up any one of my wheelchair homies right now and they're gonna answer the phone.
Hell yeah.
Like, catch it. And it doesn't matter if they're having a really bad day because there's so much more to being paralyzed, right? Just like there's so much more to like addiction and trauma. So, like, I deal with nerve pain pretty much 24/7. I could take medication for it, but then it's like, oh, you know, the side effects that come with taking the medication is just another medication, total domino effect. So, but there are things that I could do, like exercise, eating right, just overall taking care of my mental health, nutrition, to kind of alleviate that. But like even right now, I deal with nerve pain and it just feels like I'm being electrocuted with like a cattle prod.
What a
And it's
nightmare.
like, could you imagine, like, as an able-bodied person, like experiencing that and then still having to show up for people? It gets exhausting. It gets mentally exhausting. And so when you can find people that can relate to you, it makes you feel less crazy in a way.
Absolutely.
Like, because people, like, my folks and everyone around me, they're adjusting to me being paralyzed, and like they can't understand why I'm in so much pain because they physically don't see that I'm bleeding, or like, not that I'm bleeding, but like there's no physical
Signs, yeah.
signs of like the nerve pain going off, but it being so painful and just bringing me to tears. Like I felt like for the first year and a half, I just cried because of frustration and just being in pain. And then it's like, am I being dramatic about this? Like you start to question yourself again. And really, so I really like to advocate like going out there, finding those support groups, connecting with like-minded people. And then also just making sure, because we are all human, right? Connecting with the right people,
Yes.
connecting with the people that are going to hold you accountable, connect with the people that are going to uplift you and bring you up and be supportive, but still kind of bring you back to like balance. Because when you're on a slippery slope, one wrong step and you can slide down into a very negative, deep, dark hole.
Absolutely.
And there was a support group that I was a part of, but it was very toxic, like just very, lack of a better term, the victim mentality. And it's like, okay, I know what that road looks like. I've been down there. I don't want to go down that again, especially as a wheelchair user, because it's not going to be productive for me. And it's not going to be productive for the people around me. Like, and I just want to make my life easier, make other people's lives easier. And so you have to really like be careful with what you consume, like negativity, like negative shows. Like for a long time, I didn't watch like any like murder mystery shows, which I used to love before, because it's
Yeah.
like, oh, I don't want to absorb that, like, I don't want to absorb that information.
Dude, I gotta interrupt again. I'll tell you what,
Yeah.
Hannah and I have talked about it. I used to listen to those like murder mystery podcasts, right? And then like it'd
Yeah.
be like, and then the guy killed and raped like a 3-year-old daughter. And then like, dude, I started realizing, I've literally said this verbatim on this podcast. I started walking around the house like, dude, I am fucking depressed and anxious and
And I'm like, what did I just, and like you're
like,
thinking to yourself, like, what the hell did I
wait,
just
am I gonna
consume
kill
that is
somebody?
making,
Like, yeah, like.
like, oh my gosh, So like I had to like really start checking myself, like, okay, like, and even like weeding people out of my life and back into my life, right? Like, okay, like I can't be around this person right now because they're inherently negative. And that brings me down, and I'm already hanging by a thread, right? So I have to be extremely protective with my energy, or else I can't show up for people the way I want to show up for people, right?
Amen to that.
And it could just be very dangerous. So it's like, and I, going back to what I said earlier, thank God for social media, but in this context, social media is a double-edged sword. You can get lost down the rabbit hole. I would get, we all fall into it, comparison. I'm comparing myself to other people. I'm comparing myself to able-bodied people, able-bodied women. Like, oh, I'm not desirable anymore. Like, nobody's gonna want to be with me, and it's like, no, like, I'm still cool.
You are, you
I
sure as
can be
hell
the
are.
cool aunt, like, I'm still worthy of love. We're all still worthy of love. But when you start to like compare yourself and go down that slippery slope of the self-loathing, that's where it gets really dangerous. That's where I won't get out of bed for days, weeks on end. And if I do, it's literally to just do the bare minimum hygiene. And then you don't like yourself at the end of that. And it's like, oh, like, God, I just wasted a week in bed. Like, I'm so pathetic. And it's like, no, like,
And it's that
you just,
vicious, cycle.
yeah, that hamster wheel. Yeah.
There's so many similarities to what you go through and what someone in active addiction kind of goes through. I really love your thinking and your thought process because you're saying all the absolute right things for you to move forward in a healthy new way, right? Like, hey, I'm like you're very cognizant of your in emotional intelligence, shall I say, right?
Yeah,
Like, hey,
thank you.
like there's more than just happy, mad, sad, glad, right? Like there's
Right.
plenty of different emotions, right? Like today I'm frustrated, which is just like, a little side tangent off of angry and sad and kind of frustrated. You know what I mean? Like
Yeah.
there's different emotions and it's okay to be with those, right? And I loved what you said a while back, actually, about surrendering. Right. Like without that, I don't know if you move forward in this way, right? Because you're still looking back, right?
Right.
You're still hoping for something that can't be, right? Like I to this day, going towards 7 years of sobriety, can look back and go, well, it could have been this, or maybe, with our thoughts, right?
Yeah,
With
the
especially with
maybes,
like,
yeah.
especially with OCD or and anxiety on top of it, like any sort of generalized anxiety, you can start getting into what if land. And then
Yeah.
for people like you and people like I and our listeners, that's not a good place to be. It's not.
Right.
It's really not because we can make up these stories, like you just explained so eloquently, that, I'm worthless, right? Because I didn't get out of bed, or I'm a burden because I can't move as fast as society would have me believe, right? And
Right.
if you sit there and you ruminate at it, and all of a sudden you sit here and you start adding extra emotions to it, guess what? Those start feeling really real, and you know exactly what I'm
Yes.
talking about.
Oh,
They start
yeah.
feeling really real, and then all of a sudden we are completely defeated. Now, I don't mean to sit here and say, oh, hey, poor me, Mr. Cameron, who like to fucking, drink way too many alcoholic beverages, as any other, is even anywhere close to what you're having to deal with, but there are similarities, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I'm just so happy that you're aware of, those types of behaviors so you can get yourself out of it because you are a very wonderful, loving, kind, always have been upbeat, always have been a shining star. I've always enjoyed my interactions with you. And to take that diagnosis and to even be sitting here with me and saying like, hey, I can be positive on certain days is a hell of a fucking testament to who you are as a person. So if you're ever having any hard days, I just want to say this, feel free to reach out to me. Yeah, I mean, Hen will probably reach out to you. I mean, Michael, everybody loves you. I know my family does. My mom comes and sit
Yeah.
next to you and shit. But it's just so refreshing to hear. And I'm just glad that you have a support group. I know that was way off fucking tangent, but I had to get it out before I forget it. That's
Yeah.
what happens
Yeah.
with live podcasting. If I sit here and I hear you say something, all of a
Yeah, and
sudden
it just,
my
yeah.
squirrel brain, it'll float away if I don't say anything. I drank myself
Yeah.
for like silly sometimes. So I had to say it.
Yeah,
But
and no worries. I really appreciate that. Just for the listeners out there is a lot of intimidation when it comes to surrendering, but there's a lot of growth and beauty that comes from that, right?
Amen.
So, like, it's like, okay, I may not be able to go run and play soccer anymore, but now I've just opened up like a whole new world to way different experiences. One thing that I'm quite tickled with is because I've always been a creative person, but now I get to be creative in ways that are just never would have thought of. Like creative solutions, like how amazing is that? Like, okay, somebody says to do something this way, well, I can't. So now I get to, right? In a positive way, I get to instead of a negative way, because that I get to do this, that you have to be very careful with the wordage, right? So I get to have this creative freedom to figure something out. And then I get the satisfaction of being like, you know what? I just fucking did that.
Fuck
And I
yeah.
just did it in a way that nobody knew how to do it. I came in here, I did it, and I did it paralyzed, and I did it, with facing adversity and I overcame it. And it's in those little moments that like really fuel me to go on to sometimes the next hour, sometimes the next day, sometimes it fuels me enough for another month or 2 months. It's really just finding those things that will bring you joy and happiness and like pure joy and happiness and love, and like pour into yourself and surrendering to the fact that, okay, the world is literally my oyster. It's amazing. And it sounds weird, but not a lot of people get second chances. Not a lot of people get another opportunity, another chance at life. I'm very blessed that I get to, and I'm very blessed that I get to do it in a way that kind of is exclusive to me, right? Yeah. And I can hold that to my chest and like hold that close to my heart and be like, if anybody's got me, I've got me. And I can do it, and I can lean on myself and lean on and leaning on other good hearted people, right?
Yep.
But ultimately it's like just being careful how you talk to yourself and like how you view things. Like some people have the connotation again that surrender is, oh, I'm admitting defeat.
Yep.
Well, no, not really. Like you're surrendering to an experience that you now get to have maybe a shift in perspective, and you get to look at things from a different point of view and have that creative freedom to figure it out.
Absolutely.
And it's Absolutely. Just, it really is, there is beauty in tragedy. And I think sometimes society just wants to focus on the tragedy. Right? Yeah. Because that makes for good headlines, good news, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there is such beauty in it. And you can't lose sight of that. It's so easy to. I do it all the time.
Yep.
But I find that even just pausing for a moment, like something as simple as like flowers or the innocence of watching children play or animals. Mm-hmm. Or I love gardening. So like watching something grow literally before my eyes that I helped create, like there's yep. beauty in that.
Yep.
And just pausing, like everyone's in a hurry. Just, I think if more people paused and slowed down and just were more present, I think that would alleviate a lot of less stress.
I agree.
For everybody, right? It's a nice ripple effect in that sense.
Yeah. I think I really love kind of what you said about like, you know, out of tragedy comes beauty, right? Like
right,
I'm a big proponent. Maybe it's because I was raised Catholic, right? Like we're supposed to be like, you know, grateful for our suffering, right? And when you hear that, right, you're like, what, why the fuck would I be grateful for my suffering,
yeah.
right?
Right?
And so But the funny thing is, it's coming out the other side of my addiction. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't be more grateful for it. I couldn't
right.
be more grateful.
Yeah.
Because at one point I was staring at a loaded pistol, right? Like
yeah.
I was
yeah.
this close to killing myself.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so like to look back at that and to see where that got me to where I am now with that word, like we talked about surrendering,
mm-hmm.
I am grateful for it. Were they
yeah.
dark, miserable fucking times? You bet your fucking ass they were.
Yeah.
Would I ever wish it upon my worst enemy? Absolutely not. But
yeah.
guess what? In my story, for my little jaunt around the world for however long I'm here, I'm
mm-hmm.
grateful that it happened because it gave me the life that I have today. And I
yeah.
hope it sounds like you're on the path of having that same sort of mindset, right? Like this looks different. My story, the writer might have, you know, he was sitting there writing your story out. Oh, hey, you know, Sunshine liked to play soccer. She was doing great. She was going to speed up on this thing. Oh, hey, let's throw a super plot twist into it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, hey, congratulations.
Yeah.
You can't walk anymore. And we got to find a new way to deal with that. Right. And there's going to be mm-hmm. these up and down undulations, right? We got to go with the waves. We got to not fight against them. And the only thing we're really fighting against, aside from not being able to walk, I don't mean to be insensitive here, is the voice up here. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In between the years, that's my worst
yeah.
enemy.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that really, that's everybody's worst enemy is ourselves. Right. And it's
yeah.
like really giving ourselves grace. And I think by showing up for others and allowing, like, even with our interaction right now, you're allowing me to like have the space to express myself. That's such a beautiful thing.
Feels good,
and,
doesn't it?
And It does, yeah. And doing it in a way that's not controversial or attention seeking, right? It's very humbling, it's very cathartic. Like, it's just, yeah, you know, I
It's fucking
it
awesome.
it's a
Yeah.
is yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It's a very beautiful thing.
Well, I have kept you longer than I already told you I would. So,
Yeah, that's quite all right.
you have been fantastic. We have a couple questions that we always ask our guests. So I'm going to ask you a couple of them.
Cool.
And the first one is usually, I know this doesn't pertain to you because you're not in addiction, but I think it still can work for you.
Absolutely.
What's your favorite part of recovery? And we can put a little twist on this. What's your favorite part of your life now, Sunshine?
Oh, that is a good question. I think a favorite part of mine is, for me personally, meeting. So, like, the disabled community is a community that doesn't discriminate, right? Anybody can join it at any time. And eventually, we all will when we get old. And even people who break their arm, women who are pregnant, you know. And the. My favorite part of recovery is all the people I meet that I probably would have overlooked before.
Amen to that.
And, like, you know, and like the beauty that quite literally everybody brings. Even my worst interactions with people, when they're super negative, like, reveal something about myself, right? It's like something I need to work on. Like, oh, okay, like that didn't affect me today. Why didn't that affect me today? Like, oh, it didn't affect me in a negative way, for one, because I didn't allow it, but because I did like all these other little steps of like pouring into myself before, like putting on, like going back to like the, I didn't grow up religious per se, but I've always had like a anthropological fascination with God. And in the Bible, you know, you put on a shield, right? So you're putting on the armor of God. And for me, that looks like self-care. So, like, when I take care of myself, I'm able to face anything. And yeah, just overall, long story longer is the people that I meet. I never would have thought before to like ever interact with this particular kind of person simply because they're in a wheelchair and I thought maybe I didn't have anything I could relate to with them. That couldn't be further from the case. Like, it's like, wow, like, that's amazing. So definitely the people that I've met.
I love that answer. And it's another correlation with the recovery community. You tied that in beautifully, right? Like there are people that I normally wouldn't have ever had any conversations with, right? That I've met in the rooms that were complete undesirables, quote unquote, right? That are some of the greatest people I've ever fucking met in my entire life. And Henry has said it on here too, like, you know, people who were shooting heroin in puddle with puddle water, right? Like from a puddle just to shoot up, and now they're going to school to be a fucking doctor. You know what I mean? Like you know, like, and these are people that you wouldn't talk to, right? You wouldn't normally talk to. You'd walk by them on the street and you wouldn't know, but then lo and behold, you give them a chance through our suffering, right? Like through a part of this whole story, we have these interactions and we're graced with those wonderful interactions. So yeah, I love that fucking answer. Great answer. And then the last one. And I imagine you have a lot to say about this one, so I'll let you do it. What would you tell somebody who is struggling right now?
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a juicy one.
So, and it's and I think a shout out to my disabled community because it is a question that goes around a lot. I try to reach out to people who've been doing it for a long time. You know, reach out to those vets, those people. For me, it would be the people that have been in a chair for 20, 30 plus years. And it sounds very basic, but things do get easier. Things do get easier because through practice makes progress. I don't like the phrase practice equals perfect because there's no such thing as perfect. And that gives you know, kind of, it's kind of a neg, there's a negativity underlying negative expectation that nobody can ever reach with that.
Yeah,
But when you
unachievable.
say, yeah, so when you say practice makes progress, that's very true. And only And that's individual progress, right? That's not societal progress. Like, so I am in no hurry to fit back into, like, quote, society standards.
Don't.
And it, right, yeah. And I have the privilege, right? Out of all of my privileges that have been taken away, I have the privilege of kind of sitting back and being like, ah, I can just be human, you know? I don't have to go and put on a uniform and play pretend. And that being said, really allowing yourself to feel the emotions. Don't try to distract yourself. Try to sit with yourself. And if you are feeling sad or suicidal, reach out to the people that have been doing it for a long time. They're not going to turn you away. They're just not. I remember the very first when I was in rehab, because after the hospital you go straight to rehab. I met this gentleman. His name was Todd. He was paralyzed for 20 years. He was paralyzed. I think it was skiing or snowboarding. And I didn't realize how emotional I would be seeing him. I saw him. And without even saying words, I just started to cry because I just felt safe in a way. I felt so not alone. And that for me is what keeps me from taking my life because, you know, I do deal with suicidal thoughts, is knowing I'm not alone. And it's so easy to fall into that voice of, you're alone. Nobody loves you. You're a burden. But that's not the case. It really is not the case. There are people out there that do love you and that will never make you feel like a burden. They're gonna hold that space for you, right? And so once I got to talking with him, I left him speechless, which I was like, oh, did I say something wrong? And I think I had said it to you when we met up at the soccer game. All I could say to myself was, I'm excited to meet my future self, whoever that looks like, wherever that looks like. And yeah, in a hopeful way, right? Like not in a negative way. Like I know through great suffering and tragedy comes beauty. It may not come fast enough for other people, but the people that matter will stay and they'll be supportive. And it gets easier.
It
It
does.
gets it's like navigating really rough water. It's like being a fisherman, right? Some days they have really hard days at sea and people lose their lives. Like shout out Deadliest Catch, you know? Like and so sometimes the water is smooth and they're able to get through, you know, a day of fishing just fine. But with that experience, you know, they know, okay, with this rough water, I know to have my foot, I know my balance, right? So I become a better fisherman. And you just be kind of become a better fisherman of life. And it does get easier.
Good.
But to reach out to people that have been through it, you know, and are experienced.
Who's on your team, right? Like we all have it. That was I could talk to you for 16 hours, dude.
I know,
Yeah,
I can see why all these other podcasts go for, I mean, you know, a long time. It's
You
not
could, you
easy
could,
to.
do you see what I'm saying? Yeah, they you could
Yeah,
literally just
yeah.
go for 2.5 hours. I could sit here and literally talk
Yeah.
with you for 3 hours. But I
Yeah.
have kids crying and shit.
Yeah.
But I
Yeah.
just, I personally, I want to thank you again, for coming on here. Thank you for being, so open and so vulnerable. And really, I mean, dude, you have a lot of gems in there. A lot of gems in
Thanks.
there. And when I listen back to this, like a lot of these things that you said really hit me, I'm pretty deep and are very thought-provoking. And I just want to say that, from somebody who deals with, darkness and mental health as well, suicide's never the answer. If you need to talk to me, you can. That offer sticks out. I imagine
Same. Yeah.
that you know, when dealing with that diagnosis, that would be my first, you know, that, like when I sit here and I think about how my brain works, that would be my first intuition, right? Be like, okay, well, hey, well, what's the point of living, right? But that's not it because of what we just talked about, right? Right.
Yeah.
You now have the opportunity to go and be that shining star for the next person who has a tragic accident. Right. Mm-hmm. Like just like I get to do with this podcast or with people I come in contact with, I get to lead by example now and I get to show them that there is life right outside of substance abuse. And it's how I carry myself. And you get to do that each day, whether you know that you're doing it or not. Right. So, I really, 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 really want to thank you. That was a fucking awesome episode.
Sweet.
And it was super awesome talking with you. It's super great seeing you the other day. I imagine I'll be seeing you around more now that Michael's back. And I look forward to it. I'm going to give you a big hug next time I see you. This will come out on Monday and I'll share it with you. And then, you can listen back and send it off and maybe we can help some people. I have a feeling we're going to help a lot. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I just wanted to say thank you. And anything else you want to say before I kick you out? And then I regurgitate everything I just said to you again by myself.
Yeah. You know, if there's anybody out there that's, you know, anything at all, feel free to reach out to me. My Instagram is Rollin Rach, RollinRach. You know, shoot me a DM if you need to talk. You know, nobody's alone in this. We're all, in the famous words of Joe Rogan, we're all just monkeys spinning on a rock, you know, through space. And we're in this together. So don't lose faith. Don't lose hope. And you're not alone.
Love it. All right, Rachel. Well, hey, you keep that optimism, because if I see you and I see you into some negative stuff, I'm gonna replay this episode and I'm just gonna hand it to you. I'm gonna say,
yeah, hey, just pull listen. Me right out.
Yeah dude, listen to this positive person that talked with me 3 months ago. All right, this ain't
That's
it.
Right.
All right. Hey, have a good rest of your day, Rachel. Thank you
so
again.
Much. Yeah, my pleasure. Thank
Bye.
You. Bye.
Bye. Holy shit, man. Wowee. That hit me in all sorts of different emotions. Really just puts life into complete perspective. You know, coming around, living a normal life, you know, active, riding a bike, you know, we're out getting exercise and we see this sick berm that we're gonna hey, we fell the last time, like I just gotta speed up a little bit, I'm gonna hit that. And like she said, like, you know, like BMXers or skateboarders, like, yeah dude, that's how you think. Like if I go back and I think about my skateboarding days, if I was trying to say, you know, do a kickflip or a frontside flip over a set of stairs and I'm coming up short, I have to go faster. Okay, so I gotta push a little bit more. And the fact that, you know, just doing that and it's just one small act and your entire existence is completely changed, like that. How the fuck do you deal with that, right? How the fuck do you deal with that? And you can hear throughout that interview, you know, the ups and downs that she had to deal with while dealing with that, right? Like it's like, oh hey, I'm super positive about this. This isn't bad. This isn't bad. And then, you know, the next day it comes back and reality comes and it's like, oh, this is bad. This is bad. I'm bad. This is my fault. And we can kind of do that in our addictions as well, right? Like, oh, like everything's fine. We're good. I'm fine. This is tits, you know. It's all good. Everything's fine. Yada, yada, yada. Next day. This is terrible. I hate myself. Life is ass. And we can do the same things. And to be completely honest with you, we can do that in sobriety, right? Like, I think she highlighted a lot of very important points of just the overall struggle of being a human, right? Like, there are days where we can get really distraught and we can be really not very nice to ourselves. I know I can. And, you know, it's a lot easier to do that than to keep that optimism that she had after she first, you know, got the diagnosis, right? You're saying there's a chance. You're saying there's a chance. I loved the fact that, you know, there are groups out there for people in her situation, right? So, you know, she has people that she can lean on, kind of like an AA sober community, right? That's fucking awesome. That's fucking awesome. And you can see the effects of that, right? Because you know the power any of my people in recovery or our people in recovery who are listening to this show, you know the power of picking up that phone and calling a few of your bangers in there, the ones that you know are going to pick up, the ones that you know exactly what the fuck you're talking about, the ones that know what you're going through to an extent, and the ones that are going to help you get through it. And the fact that she has that as a resource is probably the reason why she was even still here, sitting here talking to me. Because I shit you not, dude, like if you would tell me like tomorrow, if I was to get into a car accident, and God willing, that doesn't happen. And it's like, hey, yeah, you're paralyzed from the belly button down. You're never gonna walk again. My first initial thought would be, I'm probably just going to kill myself. I may not do it fast. The Gipper would be in my ass. I'd probably start drinking again and go crazy or something like that. Who fucking knows? I mean, I'm not a future, you know, fucking, I'm not a Miss Cleo or anything like that, but my initial thinking would go right there. And so I appreciate her opening up about that, because how do you not? How do you not? You know, you're living this wonderful life. You're an active person. And like I said, I've known her for, you know, over a decade. You know, she's an active woman, you know, runs around, does all kinds of things, would hike, you know, very vibrant, boppy, all this. And then all of a sudden, gone. See you later. Not for you anymore. And I just think that was a really powerful episode, and I hope you guys stuck around and listened to that whole thing, because my Lord, there was a lot of really good shit in there. And if you can't find anything in there, you should probably re-listen to it, because there was about 20 specific things that she said in there that really hit me. And it puts a lot of our trivial bullshit into perspective, right? Puts a lot of things into perspective, even the small things like walking to a car, right? I know when I got to go to the grocery store for the 15th fucking time in a day, that me getting in the car sometimes seems like a burden. Well, guess who's going to think about that differently now moving forward? This guy, right? It doesn't take me 15 minutes to get in the fucking car. I don't gotta grab a wheelchair. I saw her wheelchair just recently, 2 weeks ago. It's a big fucking wheelchair, dude. She's a small woman, man. Like, she's very petite. Like, I think she might weigh like fucking what, 120 pounds. Rachel, I'm sorry, I'm not trying to guess your weight on the podcast, but yeah, you know, she's a thin person. And having to break that down by yourself and all this, I can see how that could get discouraging. So, shout out to her. What a wonderful, vibrant, loving person. And what a brave human being that gets dealt a terrible card and is navigating her way through it in a positive way, despite her brain trying to tell her the opposite. And that is the struggle that we all deal with. And I think that was very, very, very fucking beautiful. Like I said, I could talk to her for about 16 hours, dude. Very infectious, very genuine, and just overall great. So shout out to her. Follow her if you want. And, if you know anybody that is dealing with any sort of, you know, physical ailment or, you know, any sort of disability like that, I'm sure she'd be willing to, you know, have a conversation and to, point you in the right direction. So if you know anybody who's dealing with something like that, reach out to Rachel. Her Instagram tag is at the end of her episode, as you heard. So, Hen will be back next week. I'm super fucking excited about that. I hope he's had a great time spending time with good old Deb. That's always good. And it's going to be great to have him back. We are getting some stuff uploaded to Instagram. So all these episodes that you've been listening to are going to be getting uploaded later on today or tomorrow, which would be Saturday and Sunday to you listeners. Monday, you'll probably get a few more sprinkled in during the week, so you'll be able to see our faces in the room while we're talking. So that'll be fun. We'll be uploading some old ones from all the old prior episodes. But if you are a new listener, give us a follow, please. A 5-star rating would be super awesome. A share is even better. You know, get it out to some people. Be like, hey, man, this podcast is kind of cool. I like this guy. I like these guys. I like what that young woman Rachel had to say. You know, this is what we do here. We try to spread positivity. We try to take the veil off of, you know, vulnerability, you know, because everybody can pretend like that doesn't exist. And it's okay to sit here and talk about feelings. And if you do it, you feel good. So that's about it. So I will, since it's already an hour and 31 minutes, dude, fuck, this is a crazy episode. I will finish this like I always do. I love you, Hen, very, very much. And Hen would say, I love you too, Cam, and be yourself and fuck what they think. And I'm going to say, be positive like Rachel. You're saying there's a chance. Later, dude.